It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Yeah, there should be some passion. This doesn't have to be boring.
Boring.
You guys get bored by baseball.
Okay, one thing the game needs is more people like you. You.
Still have grown men run around tight pants.
Mookie Betts.
Daniel Bard.
Steve Aoki.
Aaron Saltalamacchia.
This is Brock Holt.
Hey, this is John Lester.
Baseball
isn't boring.
Welcome to Baseball Isn't Boring. Here's your host, Rob Radford.
Anderson's ready. He fires a swing and a drive to deep right, away back, gone! Pitch number 10, deep into the lower deck and right. A grand slam for Jose. A 5-0 Cleveland lead.
All right, great call by Tom Hamilton. Jose Ramirez, grand slam, home run call of the day. Baseball isn't boring. At BB isn't boring. Great week that we're capping off here with Buster Olney. Buster Olney's back. He's back on the podcast, ESPN's Buster Olney. He's headed to Boston for the big Cubs-Red Sox series, the Sunday night game, ESPN. And we're going to dive into the Cubs. We're going to dive into the impact. I think this is a great topic. The impact Craig Counsell has had on the Cubs, has had on managerial contracts, and really where the Cubs land in, among the elite. And Buster not only dives into how Counsell has impacted so many things in so many ways, probably more than a lot of managers in a long, long time. Not only that, but Buster identifies who he thinks is the absolute best team and teams. It's a good one. Buster's always great. We always appreciate having him on. All right, subscribe, rate, review. Subscribe, rate, review at BB Isn't Boring. Here you go. Here's Buster Olney.
All right, there's no human being I'd rather have on the podcast right now than Buster Olney. Back. Let's go. Buster, I'm going to see you in person, the big Red Sox-Cubs showdown. You have the game on Sunday night, which is it's a good one, right? I mean, you guys,
it should be renamed going forward, like the Theo tournament, right?
The Theo tournament,
something like that. They give like a special cup, right, or something along those lines with Theo's mentioned.
I think
he sort of tied those franchises together forever.
I think we should revisit the animosity between the organizations when Theo left, starting with not letting how it changed the course of history where they wouldn't let Torrey Lovello interview for the Cubs job. So, yeah. So it's a lot of good stuff. It's John Lester. You're absolutely right. I mean, I don't know if Theo should throw out the first pitch, but it's going to be good. I think it's going to be an interesting series is what I'm saying.
I do too. The Cubs are a team that we've seen the organization get better, you know, year after year after year. They went out after last season, made the aggressive move for Craig Counsell. Biggest contract given out to any manager ever. 5 years, $40 million. Someone who's known as being a difference maker as a manager. And look, David Ross is very respected within the sport, but Craig Counsell generally considered to be one of the best. And you wonder what kind of impact he's having, even at a time when the Cubs have had a lot of injuries. And they're facing the Red Sox, and there are just so many parallels now because the Red Sox are dealing with all these injuries. And this upcoming offseason, Alex Cora will be the first major, you know, big-time manager who's going to fall on the path of what Craig Counsell created by going into free agency. That's so incredible. Two good teams and really interesting parallels.
That's such a good topic to be brought up, and I'm sure it'll be brought up again. The Cora contract or the Counsell contract. It was not only Cora, right? I mean, we hear this with all managers. It hasn't been, I don't think there's been a managerial financial statement or settlement or contract that had more ripple effects than the Counsell one. Because we don't usually talk about managers' contracts. But once the Counsell deal was done, we immediately say, oh, hey, listen, this guy's going to get that. That guy's going to get this. Skip Schumacher's going to get this. Cora's going to get that. It doesn't matter where, if they finish in first or last. Counsell has, this is a momentous contract, I think, for major league managers, right?
Yeah, I wrote about this last fall, right after Counsell got his deal, and talked with a lot of current managers, and they were rooting him on. Like, they're like, yeah, finally. Like, somebody is getting paid because, as you know, for the last 20 years, manager pay has basically been in retreat. And I don't know the exact number. For example, the Carlos Mendoza is making as manager of the New York Mets. The New York Mets, who have the richest owner in baseball, right? And their manager, Carlos Mendoza, depending on who you believe, is either making $750,000 or $800,000. Okay, he's basically making what a player makes in minimum wage to manage the New York Mets. Okay, I think Joe Torre set the previous record for managerial salary that Craig Counsell wound up breaking last fall. He set that like in 2005.
Oh,
so almost 20 years go by. Front offices, as you know, increasingly taking up more space, taking up more oxygen, and decisions that are being made. You know, I've made the comparison that in a lot of organizations, the managers become the White House spokesperson, where they used to be the most important voice in an organization. And now you feel like the pendulum started to swing back a little bit the other way. It'll never go back all the way. You know, David Stearns is making somewhere between $60 and $75 million to run the Mets. I don't think Carlos Mendoza is going to be making that anytime soon. But the Counsell deal, I think, was first off an acknowledgement by Jed Hoyer, head of baseball operation for the Cubs, that managers can make a difference, right? Hmm. And so they decided to pay him that way. And Alex Cora is going to find, when he's a free agent in the fall, he's viewed as someone in the industry who can make a difference. And maybe that's with the Dodgers. Maybe it's with some other team. But he's going to have opportunities.
I think that, you know, the Counsell deal, to your point, was so extreme, and it's not extreme, you know, from a player's perspective, from a manager's perspective, about that jump that he took and how Jed prioritized that it did, as it is a different mindset. I mean, I think, to go back to Alex Cora, if he entered into free agency, whether it was the Red Sox went south and they let him go, or he just rode it out. Well, I'll put it this way, Buster. Say the Red Sox continue to do well. Say Craig Breslow offers Alex Cora a deal. We want you to be manager. Because of the Craig Counsell contract, there is a scenario where Alex Cora said, thanks, but we'll see how this plays out. You know?
Yeah. Well, who was Alex Cora's agent during his time as a player? Yeah,
Scott Boras.
Yeah. Scott Boras. What does Scott Boras always do when his players reach the, you know, a year from free agency? He almost always takes his clients into the marketplace. So Alex understands this, that his numbers are going to be pushed if he can get out into an open market. And look, that would not be a good situation for every manager, but there are managers who reach a certain stature where they could push those numbers, and it would benefit all managers, which is why when Counsell got his deal last fall, and he made the decision, and this is someone who, as you know, worked in the union, he was part of the executive committee, he made the decision, I'm going to go out in the open market, we'll see what happens. The Cubs call quickly. They outbid the Brewers by like 50%, which is why I was sort of unseemly when the Brewers were whining about Council leaving. It was like, no, you know what? You didn't value the manager as highly as the Cubs. You know, you can you should understand why he's leaving. Other managers were so happy that he did this because it pushed the ceiling upward. And now Alex Cora, think of him as being the next manager who's going to grab the baton of that opportunity. He's going to push salaries even more. And it should be that way. Look, I thought for years that front office people like Theo were wildly undervalued. You know, you think about Theo, and I don't know what his salary was in 2004, but what his value to the Red Sox organization was at that time, the difference that he made, oh my God, he should have, you know, those guys should have been making more money. But I think it's the same true with managers. The idea that the guy who represents the New York Mets in front of the media twice a day is making less than most of the relief pitchers, it's kind of crazy.
It is crazy. I did not realize that. It is nuts. So when it comes to Council, now, you know, as we sort of go into the series that we're talking about with the Cubs, what impact do you think Council has had? Because it's the immediate one when he signs with the Cubs is this perception. It's perception. Here we go. Yeah. Here we go. And that can be a powerful thing. But now that we're into it a little bit, what's been the impact of Craig Council?
So I wish I could give you a concrete answer. I think it's one of those things where we need more sample size. I would say this, you know, when I've talked to other managers about going against him, they say, and they used to say this about Bruce Bochy, they still say it about Bruce Bochy, he doesn't miss anything. Like you're managing against him. You know that he's going to have the right place or the right player in the right position at the right time, and he's just not going to miss in that regard. The biggest thing, and I'm curious about as we go forward, is what's his impact going to be on the bullpen? You know, Council is one of these managers with a reputation for running a great bullpen. And yet when we talked to Craig, we had the Cubs and the Rangers in our season opener. Craig was like, you know, I've been so lucky. Because he had, you know, Corey Knebel, and then he had Josh Hader, and then Devin Williams. And Craig is really self-deprecating. He goes, I basically have been managing eight innings my whole time as a major league manager. Like, he's always had great closers. And one of the Cubs' early season issues this year is the back end of their bullpen. And we'll see what decisions he makes. If you look at his track record, he'll eventually figure it out, you know, the way a Bochy has, the way a Buck Showalter has. He was always very good at running bullpens. And I would expect that's going to be the case with the Cubs.
I think it's – and also, we want to have immediate opinions about this. But to your point, he has to get to know his players. I mean, he has to get to know his team. And it's not just him. It's every manager. We just sat with Alex Cora, and Cora was talking about, you know, things like not resting players. He's like – I want to basically have players. He didn't say I want players to play 162, but I want that mentality more than the protecting. Now, the medical people won't like it, but I view this, the players that I have, maybe in a different way than I viewed the previous players. Same thing with the starters. Hey, you know what? I'm not just going to go by the book and take a guy out after second time through the order. I'm going to view it a different way because I know that player more. This is what all managers are going through right now. We want immediate answers, especially with the bullpen, right? I mean, yeah.
And it's a lot easier for Alex Cora to do that now that he has experience, now he's time in the books. Can you imagine if Carlos Mendoza went to David Stern said, no, you know what? I'm going to play everybody 162. Or, you know, you're just not going to do that. Alex has enough stature in the game where he can make decisions like that. And you're right. I mean, front offices, you know, we went from resting pitchers and putting on pitching, pitcher innings limits to where you're starting to hear the last 5 years about load management and players, you know, are better when they're rested. And then the old Atlanta Braves pop up and everyone's playing 155 games and they're the best team in baseball during the regular season. And all of a sudden, some of those, you know, the front office perspectives aren't as defensible as they used to be. And I do, you feel like the pendulum is swinging back the other way right now, where managers are having more authority. They're thinking more about relying on starting pitchers, and they're also rethinking some of these, feelings in the industry about resting players.
Yeah, it's funny, the push and pull. It's the push and pull. We've gone through, especially in recent years, how much influence does the front office have? I'm not going to paint this with a broad brush, but it's look at the final fours for the teams for the last couple of years. These are old school guys for the most part. Old school guys who are secure in themselves, who are saying, I'll take your information, but I'm going to do it my way. And I'm not saying that that's scientifically the path to win a World Series, but we can't ignore that. We can't ignore that these guys, you have to be secure in your existence of what you know and what you feel. And to your point, I think Council and Cora are those two kind of guys. So.
And you have to be empowered by your front office, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I've had conversations with Chris Young, who hired Bruce Bochy essentially out of retirement, and said, this is your team to run. And how does Bochy run a pitching staff differently than, say, the Toronto Blue Jays? When he watches his pitchers pitch in a game, he's watching them that day, right? He didn't map out something at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and immediately default to that and say, Jose Berríos in playoff game is dominating. But you know what? We decided 6 hours ago we're going to go to the bullpen in the fifth inning. No, Boch, he has the power given to him by his general manager to watch the pitcher and make his decisions. We saw it when Bradford pitched against the Orioles in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You have a guy who had an ERA almost 6 during the regular season, and Boch is watching him in this game. He's like, well, he just got an out, and he got another out, and there's another inning, and he's still getting outs. I'm going to just keep watching him, and I'm not going to reflexively go to the bullpen. And he's excellent at that, and I do think that maybe that the front offices will – maybe they'll watch the Giants and the Rangers and what they did last fall and be a little bit more humble in terms of handling how a pitching staff should be run, because there's so many variables that go into play during the course of a game.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, and also now with the pitchers' injuries and – 938.
Right. 930. So can I tell you a great story about that with the pitcher?
Oh, yeah,
injuries?
Of course.
I thought this was great.
Yeah.
Billy Bean said this to me about a decade ago. And as you know, the Athletics have been a really progressive organization. But Billy told me once that someone in the room said, yeah, we're going to limit our pitchers to 180 innings. And Billy naturally pushed back and said, tell me why it's 180. Tell me why it's not 179. Maybe it should be 184. Maybe it should be 170. How can you do a one-size-fits-all blanket rules when everybody's completely different? Everyone's path to the big leagues has been completely different. Amateurs, baseball and pitching in college and all the way up. You don't really know what the wear and tear is. But I think what's happened is that a lot of the front offices, they desperately need and to feel control over situations, right? So mm-hmm. It's like 180 was the number, And now it feels like that maybe there's some field of the game that's being exercised by folks like Bruce Bochy, like Alex Cora, and they're starting to swing back the other way.
Well, it's interesting because we had Drew Pomerantz on about a week or so ago, and we were talking about this. It's, listen, in the last week, Buster, I've talked to maybe 5 different players, people, and I've gotten all legitimate answers to the injury thing. But Pomerantz has talked about that in 2019, after the Red Sox win, they want to like draw back, right? They're like, our pitchers went too deep. We want to draw back and we're going to slow play it. He's like, that's the first time I ever got hurt. When I did something that it seemed good on paper, but it wasn't the right thing for me. It's like, and I was like, oh, to me, a lot of this stuff makes sense. And that made sense to me. But it comes back to what you're talking about, the feel of it. So, yeah.
And you know what? And also the realization that you're not going to be able to control everything. And you don't know all the variables because you don't know, you know, they're not charting pitches when these kids are, you know, 11, 12, 13, 14 years old. They're not collecting information. They don't really know what the condition of these players are and how often they're pitching when they're young, which is a factor. And so I think to some degree, teams have to let pitchers just pitch. Like I'm watching the Pirates with Paul Skeens. Like, what are we doing? At some point, the guy's one of your 10 best pitchers. Put him in the big leagues, right? Yeah. You're going to slow play that stuff, Rob? Come on.
I know. Selfishly, for no other reason. Let's go. Let's see this pitch. Guy pitch. But, all right. So, I want to ask you, and I won't take up too much of your time, but I want to ask you sort of like the what teams aren't fraudulent. There's no other way to put it. But we had mentioned the Cubs. And they're sort of, to me, like on the, one of these teams on the edge. You make the case. Now, the Bellinger thing, which is a whole nother conversation about, you know, Boris guys and Snell and Bellinger and all that, whatever. I mean, again, we don't know science, but it doesn't look like it's not a great pitcher. But Cody Bellinger is an important part of this. I'll start here before you give me the teams that you actually think these are legit top tier teams. Where do the Cubs rank in that world?
So I've got them. Actually, it's interesting. I kind of, you know, I'm thinking that they're somewhere in the 10 to 12 range. And I think they have a lot of room to grow, you know, as Cody comes back and he's healthy and Suzuki comes back and he's healthy. Because I think, you know, they've been winning despite the fact they haven't had Suzuki. Suzuki clearly turned a corner last August. Like he went from being a mid-level player to being a second echelon player. He's a guy who's having high impact when he plays. I think from what I hear, the culture within that team is excellent. And I'm going to be biased on this because my Vanderbilt guy, Dansby Swanson, was brought in to help to change that. I think that's been excellent. They have a really good defensive team. So I think they will be consistent in terms of being competitive all year. But I still don't have them in that range of, you know, the Atlanta Braves and the Dodgers and the Phillies to me are like in a different world. The Orioles, the Yankees.
So those five, you just rattled off, and those would be, I think, the consensus, the five teams right now. Yeah. Like the Orioles, the Yankees, the Phillies, the Dodgers, the Braves. Like, yep. And so is there a team that's record-wise getting in the mix that you would say, all right, I believe in that team. We maybe didn't believe in them before. You know, there's examples of this. What the team with the best record in baseball, where I'm sitting right now in Cleveland. You know, they got the best record in baseball. But it's really, really difficult to put them in that top five. It really is.
Yeah, I want to see if their offense stays this good, right? As you and I speak, they're seventh in the major leagues in runs scored, okay? Which no one would have thought coming. They're surviving despite not hitting a lot of home runs, so we'll see on that. The team that I think might be the big shocker during the whole year are the Kansas City Royals.
Yeah, okay? I was going to mention them. Yes, thank you.
They, because of two things, you know, and look, if you're a small market team, you're always going to have your depth challenges. But we know this. They have one of the five best players in baseball in Bobby Witt Jr. Every day, they have an anchor position star. In their rotation with Cole Reagans, they have a top 10 pitcher, a legitimate ace in play in their rotation. I think it was Jeff Passan who got a line from one of his teammates in the spring that said he's like a left-handed Jacob DeGrom. Mm-hmm. He went from the Rangers to the Royals last year, picked up 3-4 miles an hour in his fastball, and he's dominant. And when you start out with anchors like that, you know what? It makes it a lot easier to build around.
And the acquisitions they made, Lugo, Waka, you know, it's like as that offseason went on, Buster, it was like, oh, this Royals, these are interesting. It's interesting. It's interesting. It's interesting. But in the back of your mind, like, it's the Royals.
They won 56 games last year.
I know. So it's like, oh, that's nice. It's good for them. But it is like the Bobby Witt, you talk about, you don't, I love this saying. I say it all the time. You know, in baseball, you don't run isolations for outfielders, but I think you do. You do need core guys. You do need foundation guys, and that's a perfect, especially if you play shortstop. That's a perfect example.
So. Yeah, and he can do everything, right? Strong defender. He hits for power. He's hitting with average. He's doing much better against sliders and fastballs this year. He's not afraid of the moment. And it's why, you know, so the Dakota system and, you know, folks like Sarah Langs, you know, my podcast, they're saying, well, 71, 72 wins. And I felt like I was really a brilliant prognosticator at the beginning of the spring training. I said, you know what? I think this team is going to win 78 games. And I might turn out to be like 10 games short. Total idiot.
No, it's all good. It's like, yeah, I think you had the vibes. You had the correct vibes. It's just taking that extra jump. The last thing is, okay, we've given your top teams. Give me the team. Give me the team right now you think from top to bottom, this is the team, the best team in baseball.
Well, I picked the Phillies to win the World Series before the year started, and I'll, you know, stay married to that. But I think the best regular season team are the Atlanta Braves. You know, I just got done talking with someone with the Guardians who said, yeah, the Red Sox are a good team, but now we're going to play the Varsity this weekend, you know, because they're going to face the Braves. I mean, 1-9, unbelievable. You know, they have a strong bullpen. Alex Anthopoulos did a great job of restocking that bullpen. They have power up and down the lineup. As you and I speak, Matt Olson is kind of in a slide. Austin Riley hasn't gotten off to a hot start. Ronald Acuña Jr. took weeks to hit his first home run, and they're just rolling along. The only question is, once they get into the postseason, do they have a rotation that can dominate? And having Chris Sale, now that Spencer Strider's out, gives them that guy. Because you know better than I do, if Atlanta makes the postseason, Chris Sale is going to be happy if they give him the ball in game one. He will embrace that challenge. He's pitching with a big chip on his shoulder, and it's pretty cool.
It is. It is. It's one of the better stories. And, you know, after all Chris has gone through, and I said this, I talked
and owned about, every bit of it. And owned oh, every yeah. and, bit
and,
of it.
And Buster, when I was sold on this year, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe things go the other way tomorrow, I don't know. But where I was sold when I talked to him, and he said, this is the first time since 2017 I ended a year healthy. I had a healthy offseason. I entered spring training healthy, and I'm heading into the season healthy. And to me, like, that makes sense. It's not like I'm going to do it, no question. We heard, because I've heard that from him before, but that made sense to me. And then you go through spring training, and now you see, there you go. I believe it.
I think he and actually, you know, and this is Red Sox connected in two ways. I've been thinking about this. The old adage of, well, it just needs a change of scenery. Maybe that's something you shouldn't necessarily listen to. You know, that perception, maybe it's just, you know, Chris Sale needs a change of scenery. Maybe he didn't. Maybe it would have been better if they had said, wow, he's finally healthy. Let's go. Let's run with it. Because I know this, the day they traded for him, I talked to people, the Braves are like, we think he's healthy and he's going to throw great. And he is. And on the flip side of that, Tyler O'Neill for the Cardinals, like, well, it's time for a change of scenery. You know, he needs to go someplace else. Maybe he didn't.
Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe he's a really good player. And he just needed circumstances where he could be a great player again the way that he was in St. Louis.
Yeah, I would agree with all that, both those examples. Well, Buster, I appreciate it. We're going to see face-to-face. It's going to be a fun weekend, broadcast Sunday night. So it's going to be good times, man. Thank you so much.
I'll see you at Fenway.
In celebration of opening day, we've got a special episode of the Moth Podcast for you. The theme is baseball and the surprising ways it connects people.
I gaze out at the players on the field, and then I look over at my dad, and I realize that in the silence between us that something has changed. It's like I'm seeing him for the first time.
Two stories about baseball, family, and so much more. The episode's available right now. Subscribe to the Moth Podcast to make sure you hear it.